live on
Blog Talk Radio.
22nd of March, 8 to 9 p.m. hour. It's the blogtalkradionetwork.com. D.K. Thompson live show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. K. Thompson live show. My name is Eric Payne. I'm also known as the son, and you are?
The mother of you, Eric Payne. And this is K. Thompson, and we are here, you know, getting ready to do this show. Brother, there is so much stuff in the news about Donald Trump, you know, it makes me want to throw up, really. You don't know what to say. And for him to be the president, I have such difficulty in just saying, President Trump? That doesn't even sound right. And he is just goofing all over the place. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and the things that he is talking about, he's lying about. Finally, the FBI came out and gave Hillary a clean slate. Am I right?
Well, it's not.
Yes, they did that.
That's not really Hillary. It wasn't Hillary. It was Obama he was charging.
Yeah.
Hillary wasn't in that. What it was is that, Hillary, you're referring to the votes, so Hillary got more votes than he, but this particular issue was about the wiretapping issue in which Donald Trump accused the president, former President Barack Obama, of wiretapping, earlier, if you're watching the hearings earlier in the week, both the head of the FBI, Comey, and Mike Rogers, NSA chief, both came out and said that wasn't the case at all, found no evidence, actually, that a president couldn't even just do that, just order a wiretap. That was the latest, most recent, where you had the chairman of the Intelligence Committee going down to the White House, doing something unprecedented, going to the White House and sharing this information. And, in fact, the Trump team or some people connected with him were being tailed or surveilled, or there was intelligence on them during the transition period. And incidentally, Trump's people somehow were incidental in this intelligence that was being done, meaning that the other people were being surveilled or having intelligence following them. And the Trump people connected to Trump people, they just happened to be incidental in the followings of these other people, just happened to be, but which is really no great thing. It's not saying what Donald Trump has said, even though he said he feels like he's been vindicated when somebody asked him the question. There's no evidence of him wiretapping Barack Obama, wiretapping him, and that's been proven to be a lie. And you know, the crazy thing is that this Chairman Nunez, went down to the White House without breaking a protocol, so to speak, without sharing this information that he found out, which is what I just described, but really without sharing this information with other members of the committee. He went straight to the president, who they're investigating, to share the information with him, which is kind of, you know, questionable tactics, to say the least, when you're following it. But this is just more information that Trump, there's a lot of funny stuff going on with their administration. Also with Paul Manafort being found to have worked for one of the Russian oligarchs, receiving $10 million a year kind of as a consultant to improve the person's profile and business opportunities in the United States, or this gentleman, it was a businessman doing in Russia. So it's really interesting. All of this stuff is happening, as well as his Supreme Court nominee. But all this stuff is happening, and I kind of think that, you know, Donald Trump's, all the appointments and things that he's trying to put in place really should be pending.
Yeah.
They should be held like pending, like it hasn't gone through yet, because it appears that with all of the smoke that's surrounding what he's done and his Russia connection, it appears that he is engaged in collusion with, or people he knows in collusion with, the Russian government in terms of tampering with the United States election, which it should be. If it's not, I believe it is treason, though, when you're working with a foreign agent to tamper with your home government, your own government's governmental workings and elections in your favor, which is the unbelievable thing to me. We have our other co-host and our resident guest in calling in. Let me go open a phone call to Wayne Gilman, our co-host. Mr. Gilman, how
Dr.
are
Payne.
You, sir?
Good evening to everyone. How's everyone doing?
Hi, Wayne. How are you?
All right, Kay. How are you?
Fine. You know, what are you doing in this snow? Are you now snowing?
Well, I tell
you,
I've been The snow has been overwhelming. I suffered a rotator cuff injury. I didn't realize it until I had gone to the doctor the other day. And I just hope we have no more cold after tonight, no more snow for the rest of the year. You know, I've done enough. And I'm in a little discomfort, but I'm hanging in here. Not as uncomfortable as Donald Trump should be, you know.
That's right. That's right. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, we're kind of keeping an eye on him, you know. Yeah, I can't figure out how in the world, you know, he doesn't live in the White House. He lives
in what? There seems to be so much going on. I understand now that I read something today where.
But is that legal? Is he in trouble about living elsewhere as the President of the United States? Isn't he supposed to live in the White House?
You know, he's not accepting any money for the job either, so it's almost like a Bloomberg thing where Bloomberg didn't live in Gracie Mansion, but he would lease it out to different people, and he only accepted $1 each year for every year he was mayor. And I could be wrong, if Byron remembers, I don't know if he recalls what the pay arrangement was with Bloomberg, but the bottom line is that I guess so much has changed. This is not the typical presidency. And it's a good thing this man isn't accepting any taxpayer money for what nonsense he's already started, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just surprised to find out that his wife doesn't sleep with him they have separate bedrooms or something to that effect. You know, maybe that's what's affecting his judgment. I don't know. I mean, that sounds kind of.
Who lives in the White House?
Huh?
The White? Okay. I think what you're referring to is that what happens that the wife has been staying in New York with the son because the son wanted to do the whole finish school thing. That's what they claim. But you're right, Ma. He does take one too many vacations, weekends. He's been spending Mar-a-Lago, which is, I guess you can question whether he's actually staying in the White House or not, because more than any other president, he's spending every weekend at his vacation home in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Paying for that.
The taxpayer is a whole lot of money.
Well, yeah, you know, you may have a point there because that is something that he flies government property to get back and forth from D.C. So that dime is on us. So the fact that he's not accepting wages for being president, you know, there are other ways in which he's siphoning the money. But there was some story on the Internet today saying that he and the First Lady are having, she's not happy with her role as being First Lady. And apparently they have strange sleeping arrangements. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, that could be irrelevant. I mean, I snore a lot, not to be so public about it. And I know a lot of people don't want to sleep with me because of that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the least of his problems, really. This wiretap issue is a big thing. Let me ask Byron Saunders. We got a resident guest. The wiretap issue is the biggest thing I think he has to worry about. What do you think, Byron?
Byron.
Hello. All right. You're there, Byron?
I'm here. Yes. So what I was saying was that the wiretapping is a major. Engaging. The other thing is that the Russian mafia has space in Trump Tower. Now, I've been listening to a lot of the Republicans try not to give any credence to the hacking incident, but you know, let's be honest, people. You got all of these circumstances that are adding up, and it's not circumstantial anymore. It is actually as a result of the connections, and we must be honest with ourselves and with our nation. As Congress is going to have to handle this, and Comey, with respect to the chairman, yes, he violated the ethics. It's part of the collusion. That's part of a cover-up. Now, Wayne and Kay, you and I are old enough, the three of us are old enough to remember the Nixon Watergate issues. If you go back to
I remember too, my brother.
Yes, and Eric as well. But if you go back to the replay of the cover-up that Haldeman and Dean other lawyers that participated in trying to hide and shield the Nixon's criminal acts of the missing 6 minutes of the tape. Go back and replay some of those denials, and I guarantee the playbook is being used by the Republicans at this very moment, and some of the language is almost consistent to that was used back then. And so it's being noted. It's being noted by all of the now the press is really smell blood in the water now. But I think there's a deal on the table.
Yeah, I think
what would be that deal, though?
The deal is this. Well, he's got three options. Option number one is the federal intelligence collecting agencies have enough material to sink his ship. And the deal would be go away quietly. We'll take away your money from your empire, but you won't have to serve time. This is about money now, folks. The politics and the Constitution will protect the nation, but this is about the billionaires who are now going to be the ones suffering as a result of the free trade agreements that have been done by this company to protect capitalism and the Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
They are all participating
in cheap
labor.
Let's put a pin in that right there, Byron, and talk about before we get off into that tangent on it. The whole aspect that the intelligence is more, as Schiff said tonight, more than circumstantial. And if I'm hearing you correctly, you're indicating that they have enough to apply the necessary pressure for him to kind of, step down, resign from the presidency. And I think it seems as though it's going there. The press is asking those questions. The thing that that gives me concern along those lines, I would feel confident, is that Comey talked in the hearing the other day about them conducting a surveillance of Trump and his people since July and their connections and relationships with the Russian government as related to the election. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not all that secure about what he says, but also unless they're playing because they did come out and talk about Hillary being investigated, so why did they talk about Trump? Unless the long game they're playing is they have enough evidence to eventually really hang him seriously where he'll have to resign from the presidency should he have won it. But the whole question is, why wait that long and go through all this rigmarole when it could have been taken care of and Hillary could be in office? I guess when you start veering off into the billionaire question, I guess that's those guys would be the ones would have the power and the resources to step in and stop Trump's thing. And I guess since he was going to get in, they wanted to see how much they could ride it out since they had a, I guess,
but,
it would be a more
friendly
face in
the White House. But, Eric, not to question what you're saying. I mean, you're certainly on point, but you have to remember that Comey took a lot of heat for Hillary not getting elected because a lot of the members of the DNC hierarchy felt the timing of his comments regarding that email investigation were inappropriate for it to come out, just hours before the election was being held. But as it stands now, there's already talk around Washington about, I know Sarah Palin, she was on TV the other day talking about Comey's head being handed to him by Trump because she figures, as many other Republicans who watched the hearings, felt that he's Mr. Untouchable, which is the role he is supposed to play. If you see wrong, regardless of what your party affiliation is, you see wrong, you act on it, and that's it.
Right.
So,
the problem with that is that you're dealing with a guy who's in charge of presenting the evidence. Unless the strategy is present so much of it and put them on notice that we have this overwhelming evidence that you
exactly.
look like you're trying to obstruct justice. Should you fire us, and that you're not trying to be impartial, let's just then Trump will really peep his game, right? I would assume, but that is the problem, that he is the executive in charge that could end the investigation by trying to appoint friendly people to his administration, which is what he's trying to do with Sessions.
And everyone else. But I mean, the thing is, but again, we're still a government of checks and balances. There are people who are bulletproof. and it's left to those people and the press being, you know, really being on the offensive to question everything that goes on, because there's but so much lip service that we can get from Sean Spicer. You know, you could see, you know, that he has a difficult time trying to explain some of the stuff that comes down the pike. And, you know, the Gorsuch situation is interesting, but, you know, he's playing everything close to the vest. So far, he seems like he's somewhat bulletproof, but, you know, he's a conservative, and we knew this going in, so nothing in the least bit would surprise me. But I just get this impression that the administration as it stands now is slowly unraveling. I think there's certainly some fire behind what was going on prior to the election with all the collusion between the Putin government and all these elected officials, and the fact that, you know, the wiretap thing is like really decadent and insulting, that this man has not picked up the phone and is not even thinking of clearing the air. I think the worst thing he could do is just stand wrong and strong with that. And even some members of the press, Bill O'Reilly said the other day that he thinks that's going to lead to Trump's downfall for not apologizing. And that's it. You're going to take some smart guest on some talk show who is basically shooting from the hip about this thing about there being some sort of investigation. And even when the congressional figure this afternoon came out and said there was some sort of surveillance going on, but, you know, you're having a transition of government. You want to make sure that the people that these people are bringing in to separate, as the Obama administration separates from the fold, that they're credible, that they are who they are. So
yeah,
it's
exactly,
not like as if
exactly
they said
right.
It was legally done, you know, but
yeah.
Trump is acting like he felt he was vindicated now, you know, and
right.
I think
that's exactly right. I mean, I've always thought if you're doing business, anybody's doing business like they were doing business, any of his people, Manafort, doing business with the Russian government, they're going to be under surveillance, period, anyway. Well, I mean, that just seems like that's SOP. Of the FBI or the CIA or the NSA, that Americans that are doing these type of moves and having these type of relationships are going to automatically fall within under that list, that they should be under surveillance to see what's going on. So the fact that they're bringing it up and we've been wiretapped, yeah, that's kind of what the intelligence agencies do when they have an American who gets red flagged as having a connection of that level. So I don't understand why they're trying to spin it. Well, I mean, I understand why they're trying to spin it like it's such a surprise. I mean, it's also like them saying Manafort, you know, Sean Spicer getting up there saying Manafort didn't have anything to do with the campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how stupid do they think the American public is? What are you talking about? Are you an idiot? It makes them look crazy half the time. And I think that, like I said before, a lot of the stuff that he's trying to do should be pending the investigation being concluded, because it appears that he got into the White House under nefarious, unfair, illegal tactics, and the man should not be making these appointments. He should not be, while he's in there, you know, making all these appointments and making these laws and executive orders while they have time before time runs out and they get busted that they actually got there illegally. You know, that's to me, it seems like there should be something done about that. You wanted to say, Mom?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that from a child standpoint of view, when you go to, like, you know, news in a classroom, you know, and then, like, I'm going through school, and the children will say, Ms. Thompson or Ms. Payne, why do people, you know, hate this new president, Trump? Well, there's a book, The Emperor Has No Shoes.
No clothes,
no shoes. So go figure. I can't understand why, you know, people can't see through him. It's absolutely impossible. It is a joke, okay? What is he going to do? The FBI is on him. Everybody else is talking negative about him. And what he does is every weekend he goes to his other house. So who's paying for that? The American public? Somebody's paying for it, you know?
The
so
American
I don't
public
understand
is
exactly
paying
what
for it.
All this is. So if a child, you know, asks you, any of the teachers listening in, you just cite that in your book of The Emperor Has No shoes or whatever, no clothes. And that really, you know, sums it up. And then I think it's even going to be more interesting because it is getting down to the wire and the FBI has got to step in and, you know, do what they have to do, period.
Yeah. How much, what about, you have an about approximate cost of that, Byron? You very specific on that?
The notion of how deep and profound was the Russian hack, not just in regards to the Hillary campaign, the information and disinformation that they provided through the Bernie Sanders campaign, through, it can be shown that they did not hack into the voting systems themselves, but the disinformation sent throughout the country in many of the states where Trump won was based on disruption of Hillary and Bernie Sanders, so that the campaign looked like they were both not in contact with each other and working together as Democrats usually do, but being played against each other. And then when you throw a third party element in Jill Stein, remember there's that picture of Jill Stein sitting at the table with Putin, with Flynn, at a reception in Moscow, and tell me that's not part of the schematics, separating the votes. So it comes down to the hack was systematic, and it's still going on. That's the part that the American public needs to have to understand, that it is still ongoing. This is war, people. This is cyber war. We don't have to drop nuclear weapons on each other. We are at war right now.
Yeah.
And you know what? Everybody is really very concerned about the health, you know, bill. Okay? What is there going to be, you know, what do you say? They're voting on it tomorrow? Okay.
Yes. And from what I understand, they don't have the votes. They don't have the vote. Something else. The Republicans don't have the votes to pass the replacement bill at this very moment. I just got through watching it. But here's what the Republicans are guilty of: playing a very serious race-based agenda. Notice every time they use the phrase Obamacare, that's using the N-word. Okay.
Exactly.
That's code word for using the N word, and it keeps fueling that hatred against Obama and his administration, principally because he is African American. And every time they use that word, it is making sure that his base understands we are going to defeat the N care, it's obvious. It's got to stop. Because that's the part in which this Republican Party has engaged itself in playing racism as a card.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got to
stop. Already achieved that. They've already achieved that with the Obamacare moniker. They've already done that. That's already been there. And now, I mean, it's just interesting to see him when he goes, you know, went on this rally last night, night before last, when they were having the hearings, when all this devastating information was coming out again about him. But when he goes in these rallies, you hear him pointing that despicable or devastating, terrible Obamacare. So it is, like you're saying, now it's just a buzzword every time, you know, when he needs a little extra juice from the crowd, you know, and a little extra thing. That's their code word, you know, the disgusting, the people, even the way they're couching it, people who have been the victims of Obamacare. And the real victims are going to be the ones who use their health plan, which is costing more money and sending, 14, 20 million people off of health care. So, you know, this guy talks about, you know, who knew health care was so complicated. That's the issue. That's why we're having a problem, because it's complicated. And just the constant, I wonder when we're going to really be, I guess, you know, you have, 120 million people voted in the election, about half each way. 63 million for Hillary, about 60 million for Trump, right? And we have another, 180 million people in the United States that didn't vote, 300 million people in the country. So we need to get the populace, the true populace involved, and get them to be educated. I would suppose a lot of educated people who have enough money and can afford to ride out any four-year temporary presidential administration can sit back and afford not to vote and just check out and just say, I'm going to live my life and go and make my money, I'm good. You know, but as it affects people that mostly primarily look like us and other minorities, we have to be actively engaged. We can't afford to be out of the system and ride this one out,
yeah.
You know, because it affects our people directly and most devastatingly. And so we need to find a way to engage that other a portion, at least a percentage of that other 180 million Americans to get them involved in the political campaign, because the ones that are enthusiastic, on at least on the Republican side, that seem to be fueled by hatred,
yeah,
and prejudice and racism and that old kind of rallying cry, you know, we need to preserve the white race and stay dominant and you're still white people in America. I mean, clearly that's a very strong cowbell for a lot of these people to come out of the woodwork and really and really put in the work to achieve that objective, because they all came out. They were running, this is our way of life almost, you know. They almost took it back to the civil rights era, white citizens council's talking point.
And that is dangerous.
You know? Yeah, most definitely.
That is absolutely dangerous. And I don't think they're thinking, they're not thinking clearly about it, because it is very dangerous. Okay, it's getting to the point where it's us against them, white against black, black against white, okay?
Right.
And people don't realize how serious that is. Here, and this, you mean to tell me this one man, you know, has done this by all the lies that are out, and people are buying this, and it just doesn't make sense. But it will if it continues. So people have to, you know what the answer is? It should have been some time ago. You've got to find out what the issues are. You've got to find out what people are thinking, and then you find out the issues, and you get to know them, and then get out to vote, and, you know, go to your neighbors and have him vote. This is all about basic politics. You know, you have a rich guy who wants to be richer. Well, the emperor has no shoes.
No clothes.
No clothes.
But maybe he has no shoes either. Probably
barefoot.
Okay. Probably got a messed up pair of shoes.
Have some heels.
Yeah, right. Well, one of the other things, Kay, with respect to the cost of maintaining the Trump and his family, that's going to come into a major issue as well, because the one of the basics of conservatism is fiscal responsibility. And with his charging New York $400,000 a day to protect Trump Tower, which is Mayor de Blasio said he's going to pass the bill back to the federal government. Every time he goes to flies his family or across the country, or he goes to stay at his home hotels, he's charging the federal government to pay for his stay at his own hotels, pay for his meals. That's not fiscally responsible. And it's going to start to add up. And the American public, who said we wanted to put government under control, government is out of control under this president, and it's nowhere near what they were projecting and promising the American voter public. And the voter public is significantly angry, and it's going to start playing itself out more and more every day. And I can tell you, growing up in Washington during that Nixon stuff and Watergate, we had interruptions into our programming, and we only had three programs back then, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and every half hour we had interruptions. So it's starting to mount up. And because I've spoken to some folks out of, say, in Florida, where that's friendly company to the Trump administration, and even down in Florida, the news that you and I get here in New York and in Washington is not being filtered to the hinterlands. So that's why you see Trump going to his base, trying to rally the support, but by the time he gets there, the information about the Affordable Care Act, the Replacement Act, Russian hacking, it beats him before he even gets off the plane. And so even his base is now having to wonder just how long he can sustain and keep lying
to the American public. That's the point. He's starting to lose his credibility. I mean, he's lying so much, and so he's being proven to be a liar so much that his credibility as president is now being questioned. And that's what I noticed in this rally the other day, that the crowd wasn't that quite enthusiastic, overwhelmingly totally enthusiastic. You could tell that some of the people were looking at him and really listening and you know, weren't quite as enthusiastic. And that's why I noticed he put those code words in to rally the crowd up again, to bait him again, Obamacare. The victims of Obama, you know, remember who the enemy is almost that he keeps throwing out there. And the fact that he's not doing the job that he's supposed to do, and to distract the public from all of these issues. And the people talking about the Nunez came out with his little not really bombshell information to distract from the bombshell information about Manafort working for the Russian oligarch for the number of years, for $10 million a year. And somehow, you know, claiming and lying and saying he never worked for any Russian guy. So all of their stuff is being, you know, they're being revealed one by one. I mean, all of these you got at least five former employees or former people connected with his campaign that have direct ties to Russia. And this being the case, it's unbelievable that these people were willing to do this to take this American election, and also to see what the head of the chairman of the Intelligence Committee is doing.
Hey, Wayne, you know one thing? I have a question. You know, you were the former news director of, you know, WLIB, BLS, you know, when I was there, and where, you know, all of us were very involved, yeah, politically. Now, what has happened to that, you know, those listeners? I mean, you can, you know, rile them up.
The whole media landscape has changed.
Wait a minute. What were the big cases that made them riled up? What about Sonny Carson? What about Tawana Brawley? Okay. What about all those different, you know, cases and all the killings that were going on? What about Attica? Okay.
Yeah.
As it relates to the whole political setup, you know? And as it relates to anybody, you know, involved in politics and in the world. Yeah,
well, the racism is still there. It's still alive and well. I mean, the issues, I mean, as much as I would like to think things have changed for the better during our period, I think we've gone back. You know, I think thanks to social media, we're exposed to more now. And, you know, the landscape, as I was saying in the beginning, is not the same, you know. But there are outlets. I mean, I know Trump is trying to kill public broadcasting, that's been an effort that's been going on for quite some time. Whether he'll be successful is another story. But the deal is that there is a need for people to come together to be informed on a regular basis about the issues, and that was the one thing that we had. And it's not to say that it doesn't occur in other markets. I think down in Washington, D.C., you still have stations like, what's the big one down there that, not HUR, but there's WOL. I think they're still doing some sort of progressive talk. I know in Detroit that there are two black-owned stations that are competing against each other, doing pretty much the same thing. You know, it saddens me, New York being the media capital of the world, you know, that we can't look to one operation that's doing what we used to do on a full-time basis. Now, I'm not talking about spot coverage here and there and tuning in on Sunday morning to hear the Reverend so-and-so or whatever. I'm talking about something that we know. The minute you found out about Tawana Brawley, you were on the air 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening because somebody took the time to call to let you know what was going on, you know? In a way, this is that's the vacuum that we're in, and we have to keep you know, shows like what we're doing now and others alive and exposed. You know, that's the thing, because I mean, even though this is a monumental effort, and I am committed to it, And I just think that it's an important voice that we have. And I know there are people who are listening, even though we cannot monitor other than what comes before your screen. But I know it's just as big as it was when we had ratings for radio back in the day. I'm not thinking of Nielsen, but Arbitron, you know, things like that. And it's just important. It's sad that not enough of us are as focused. But, you know, as I said, I think social media and certainly the cable stations have done a lot to bring people into the fore. Whether you agree with everything that goes on is another story, you know. And somebody like an Oprah Winfrey or, you know, or Michael Jordan, somebody who's got, you know, the bank to really put forth an operation that would be balanced and fair, I think, you know, it would be commendable if that could happen, you know. It's been tried, I don't know, for some reason. I remember back in the day, BET at one time, you know, before they became a TNA outfit, you know. Decent programming.
I agree with you. We really need someone that's going to be doing the news on a 24-hour basis and that can report to the community on a 24-hour basis. I mean, the only person I think about now is Roland Martin, which is on every morning. And because people need to know that, you know, something like, you know, Trump's you just mentioned the PBS budget being cut, but also with the PBS being budget cut, there's a lot of other things that affect the community, like the Meals on Wheel program that's going to be cut.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, please.
Guys, you know,
I'm amazed
school
at that.
Budget for after-school programs. I mean, they're going back to a Bush era or really a Reagan trickle-down economics budget, heavy on the defense and the military and short on the social programs. And these are the programs that directly affect our community, and to be able to be aware of that the minute it happens to be active is really a valuable thing that we need to have access to, more than just Roland Martin or whatever black radio outlets there are. Al Sharpton is on, he's on a weekly basis, though we're talking on a daily basis.
The daily basis was WLIB.
It was
WLIB and BLS and more in that music, but I understand what you're saying.
Right.
So, I mean, and that is lacking. You know, if we could bring back, you know, the people at WLIB, because we were very political and we were talking about these issues. In fact, I remember, the Chobana Broly case. These are all cases that were not necessarily based on politics. But the point is they rally the community. You have to rally people, you know, to find out exactly what's going on. What's wrong with it? It's wrong with it.
And that's the thing,
because,
you know,
our livelihood is based on what's happening politically. All right? Just that basic.
No, I happen to agree with you, Kay. I mean, there's so much that's going on. I mean, last night a white racist from Maryland decided to board one of those discount buses to come to New York because he had such hatred and bitterness towards blacks that he took a 66-year-old man out and stabbed him to death, not on the spot. He eventually died at Bellevue Hospital. But, you know, issues like that. The Haitian brother, the musician, Wyclef Jean, you know, he was stopped the other day. He was on TV this morning, you know, these false arrests that take place, these things still exist in spite of what's going on with Trump. We're distracted by what's going on down nationally, but the problems of Missouri, Baltimore, and even here in New York, you know, they still go on, you know, and somebody's got to fill that void. I know WBAI was very good at that, you know, back in the day. And it bothers me to think that property is going to be sold at some point, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then what? What else do we turn to?
You're right about that. You're quite right about that. I think we just need to, fortunately, the Internet and the various Internet services news services, news sharing services, and the way news is has gathered, even the way news is accessed nowadays. You know, you have a lot of young people saying they found out their news through the internet, primarily on Facebook or things like that, or Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's the way people are being able to access news coverage. So it's a whole different format now. Fortune. I mean, that's the good part is that people can operate independently, and there are more outlets of people doing things. Makes it easier to do. However, the dissemination of information and the way it's all spread out, it's hard to remember or to access what is actually accurate information. I mean, we have a lot of black history things that are, shared on the internet, which is great, which is why I found out a lot of things. And there are actually a couple of websites and even Facebook pages that are donated to black history and,
yeah,
and black issues, which is really good. But like I said, as with anything on the internet, you need to find the most reputable ones and the ones that are going to find the most reputable sources of information.
Mm-hmm.
Amon, you wanted to shift gears a little bit. You wanted to talk about this lecture series that we're doing.
And this is the kind of thing that we need also, you know, with our writers, you know, we miss Mary Baraka, we miss, you know, so many people, you know, going to the community and, you know, telling them Junius Williams is still here and Richard Wesley. So Richard Wesley, on my page, people are going to see this poster on a page. The Newark International Film Festival was presenting in partnership with Express Newark and the 15th Annual Run and Shoot Filmworks Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival. Now, Richard Wesley, known playwright, award-winning playwright, he's going to be doing a network series.
International Film Festival.
You're going to be having a network series, and Richard is going to be the first speaker in the series.
Right.
All right.
A conversation
with the legendary and iconic professor Richard Wesley, and I have his book in front of me, which is Richard Wesley's Play Anthology. And, you know, he was responsible for, you know, a number of movies and a number of things that you can talk about, Eric. But he's a winner of the August Wilson Playwright Award and of the NAACP Image Award and multiple Wadelco Company Awards. Now, you're going to be hosting it.
Right.
Actors. Producer and writer Eric Payne. The time is 6:45 p.m. to 9:45 to 9 p.m. And it's at Express Newark Lecture Hall, downtown Newark. This big, wonderful, brand-new hall used to be the Hain Company. And it's at 54 Halsey Street, Newark, New Jersey, on the second floor. So, and guess what? The admission is free. Okay? So, you know, you need to...
And when is that taking place again?
It's this
Wednesday, next
Wednesday,
March 30th. March 30th. So I don't know if that's a Wednesday or whatever. This is the Newark International Film Festival. They're doing a series of events leading up to the second annual Newark International Film Festival. Myself, the host, I'm going to be talking to Richard Wesley about writing and filmmaking and things like that. A lot of people, if you don't know Richard Wesley by name, he's a playwright as well as a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know him by name, you'll certainly know some of his work. He wrote the screenplays for Let's Do It Again, the classic movie with the buddy comedy with Sidney Poitier and Bill Cosby, and it's also Uptown Saturday Night. Those are stuff that those of us coming up in the 70s, and I guess the early 80s, late 60s, remember those two classic movies. He also wrote the movie Bojangles, starring Gregory Hines, about Mr. Bojangles. And also the HBO, I think it was HBO production, Mandela, and The Clerk, the one with Sidney Poitier and Michael Caine. And Richard is currently, I believe, is a professor at NYU. And he had recently had a play called Autumn that was out in the Crossroads, I think, theater. It played, and then they also did it in Brooklyn at the Billie Holiday Theater.
Yeah.
So he is a noted writer, screenwriter, and playwright, award-winning guy, and it'll be a great pleasure for me to interview him. I always like talking to him about the business. So this is a way for everybody to sit in on that discussion. It's going to be really interesting.
And also, there is no admission. You don't have to pay anything. You come, you get to join in the conversation, and you talk about these old movies, and you talk about the way they came about and what the atmosphere and the political atmosphere was, you know, during that particular time. And remember that, you know, the fear is really, really very powerful, you know, and it can be absolutely dangerous, as Richard says in his book talking about his play anthology. And it's fortunate that, you know, we have these playwrights, including Mary Baraka, who is deceased now, but his writing philosophy is still very much alive. So, you know,
yeah.
You need to come. Yeah, you need to come out to this.
He's from North New Jersey originally, Richard Wesley. So, as is Mary Baraka, we want to mention that you could RSVP at to NORCIFF.com. NORCIFF.com. You can RSVP there. The address for the event is 54 Halsey Street, North New Jersey, on the second floor of the old Haynes Building. It's going to be really nice, so we hope people will come out.
Yeah, and we're going to be, you know, I know that he's going to probably talk to the audience and have, you know, conversation, because it brings you back, his writing brings you back to early, you know, when New York was going through a lot of changes, you know, and the Dutchman by Mary Baraka and so many works. And they were key. They were key to, you know, this whole movement that happened at that time. So I'm going to be there. Eric's going to be there. Lisa's going to be there. So we're, you know, telling people. And the posters are up. Downtown Newark is absolutely fantastic. Ras Baraka, Amiri Baraka's son, you know, has really, really done a job downtown Newark. Downtown Newark reminds me of New York City. Okay, it is that more advanced right now. Some of you, you've never been down there or you haven't been down there, it is absolutely fabulous. Okay, the New Jersey Performing Arts Center is down there. What's that? It used to be the Prudential Building, but what's the name of that building that we had? Was it the circus? Well, what's the name of that? Yeah, the circus was down there.
The Prudential
Arena.
Yeah.
I think it's it may have been changed.
Yeah, you guys, I'm sure you guys have seen Let's Do It Again in Uptown Saturday Night.
Yeah. I mean, we're dating ourselves now, but I'll admit to it.
Richard Wesley is a wonderful writer. My theater in Atlanta, Just Us Theater, back in the day, produced one of his plays, The Mighty Gents. Excellent, excellent play. I love it.
Right.
And that won an Adolfo Award. Yeah, The Mighty Gents. The Talented Tenth.
Exactly.
That's another one of his wonderful plays. He's a brilliant writer. I love his work.
Exactly. Really a great guy and a person who's always willing to share his knowledge and his information and has got some interesting stories, someone who's been there. And certainly, you know, those movies really seem to capture, though, particularly, you know, as a guy like in my young teenager days, seeing movies like Let's Do It Again, Uptown Saturday Night. I like the life that was created by these films, the black cultural life that was created, you know, and it gives you a picture of what a picture of what a black cultural life was back in those times, you know, the afros and and the bell bottoms and things like that. So it is really always enjoyable to see either one of those films. And also a lot of the old actors that appear in both of these movies that were some of my favorite actors growing up, you know, the all-star cast that they would have from Ozzie Davis to John Amos to Flip Wilson to Ruby Dee, the whole gamut of black movie stars back in the day.
And they were coming down to Newark, too, because I had interviewed a number of them for, what was the name of the show that I did? New Jersey Press Conference, I think it was. You know, it was on Channel 47, and I interviewed Esther Rolle and, you know, a whole lot of people in some of, Ras Baraka and Amiri Baraka, also Amina Baraka, who is, by the way, a fantastic singer and a blues singer and a historian. So we have so many things coming out of Newark, New Jersey, out of New Jersey, period. And some of you, if you're reluctant to come in downtown Newark, hey, your problem. You can come to Montclair. They still have a lot of things going on, really. And, you know, you can be involved. I think it's fairly safe, you know, in these areas these days. And if not, you know what to do about it. That's all.
Also, culturally, we talk a little bit further about a cultural watch, so to speak, since we're talking. I'm wondering if any of you guys got the chance to see the films, I Am Not Your Negro, Fences. These are really great films. They're two different films, obviously, but certainly I Am Not Your Negro being the documentary. about James Baldwin and his issues with racism, and really realizing that he had to be a little bit more active after the death of his three friends, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr. And it's really, I would recommend it as a must-see. I also watched the documentary 13, about the 13th Amendment by Ava DuVernay on Netflix, which is really, it's on Netflix, and I would recommend that everybody watch it, about the issue of African-American life in the United States. I'm wondering if either one of you guys,
I haven't had a chance. I wanted to see Fences, at least the film version of it. And as far as the other two films you mentioned, there's so much going on in our community that, that really needs to be highlighted, that if you, you know, it's just a question of taking the time to you know, put aside and just watch it, you know. A cold night like tonight would be a great opportunity if somebody's equipped to, you know, to get that film and just sit down and watch it and all that. And it's just so much going on that we really need to, even if we, as you all are doing, putting the word out, people need to be informed as to where and when and appearances like that. I remember going to the Newark Film Festival with you guys last year or year before last, and it was such a beautiful event, you know, things that you know, don't normally get to see, you know, get showcased, and I would like to be there for that discussion next week.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I'll see what I can do.
Information again. Let me just give you everybody the information again. This is the NIFF Network series of conversations with the legendary and iconic professor Richard Wesley. Now, Richard also, as we didn't mention it, is the winner of the August Wilson Playwright Award. And, you know, August Wilson was a fantastic playwright. You know, and the NAACP Image Award and multiple Wodelco Awards. And, Eric, you're going to be, you know, hosting it. And actor, producer, writer, political analyst, you know. And the time is 6:45 p.m. to 9 p.m. And it's at the Express Newark Lecture Hall, the second floor, in the old Haim building. But the Haim building, you are not going to believe the way the building looks. I was amazed when I was down there, you know, a few weeks ago. It's fantastic. It is
I understand that famous chef is...
New York to Chang. Yeah?
No, I was about to say that I understand the chef. I can't think of his name. I see his face. He's the African chef who's been popular in Harlem. He now has some investment in terms of opening up one of the floors at the Haynes building. I'm pretty certain I either read that or that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that he's going to be shifting his. I can't. I see his face. He's, I believe, of Ethiopian background. Maybe Byron, you might remember who I'm talking about.
I say,
the name escaped me right now. You're testing my memory here, but I know which one you're saying. You know, every once in a while, I have a senior moment.
Well, you do better than I am. I need to know what drug you're on so I could try to sort of catch up, because the things that you recall and it just trips off your tongue effortlessly, I'm sitting here banging my head trying to remember.
Well, I'm trying to catch up with y'all because on Sunday, on the 26th of March, I'll be 67 years old. So I'm trying to catch up with you, Wade.
Happy birthday. Happy early birthday.
All right.
Thank you.
I think you can get Social Security now.
Oh, yes. I'm enjoying it. I'm trying to make sure I take advantage of it before Congress tries to slip
Thank
a Mickey
you.
To it. You know?
Thank
before
you.
Before they privatize your stuff there and tell you have to go someplace
exactly.
to get your money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just hoping that we can once again see some ramifications coming from this wiretap accusation of Donald Trump to Barack Obama, because it's really kind of a despicable thing.
Yeah.
Also him mentioning that when Angela Merkel was here, Chancellor of Germany, about comparing, saying we've both been wiretapped, you know, the
right.
keeping the issue going along, and also refusing to shake her hand for a picture. We really have to, this is someone who's not fit at all to be president. And we really have to put the pressure on the representatives that they pursue every avenue available, you know, to investigate his issues, because he has not been truthful with the American public, and I see him as being real detrimental in trying to put things in place where not only to enhance his himself and his friends, but really they're trying to get everybody in place where they can put like this mini coup in. I mean, if you recently heard, and we're coming up on just about 4 minutes, but the fact that Manafort is not going to NATO, the NATO meeting, Manafort is going to Russia. And just the fact that all of this information has been coming about Russia interacting and interfering in our country's elections and trying to affect outcomes in our country, to have the man who's now Secretary of State, the best
Rex,
friend of Russia, going to Russia. Person, I mean, it's really a slap in the face, just a spit in people's face that, you know, all this time Russia is supposed to be our arch rival, and here these everybody in the Trump administration is pro Russia. It's unbelievable. I mean, people talk Trump talks about it, says negative things about everybody else except Putin and Russia.
Well, it's got to come to an end. I don't think Americans, regardless of whether it's his constituents or not, I think after a while people are going to see through this and they're not going to feel comfortable. You know, I mean, it's barely a night that goes by when you can get some sleep, because you see what goes on. You see what happened in Great Britain today. You know, it's just unfathomable, the world that we're living in. But, you know, you mentioned Rex Tillerson a moment ago. It was reported today that he didn't really want to be Secretary of State. His wife pushed him into the job, you know? Why would you take on an assignment if you don't have the fire in your belly? As he said, he should be at that NATO meeting next week, you know? But it is what it is.
Yeah.
I just hope that...
Byron, before we...
Exactly, and I understand through stories from the Washington Post that there's a dark cloud over the State Department. They have no undersecretaries. Elliot Abrams, who Tillerson wanted to have as undersecretary, was voted down by Bannon and the Trump advisors, which leaves Tillerson without any staff, basically. Remember back when he took the office, the higher-ups in his office, in the State Department, all resigned. So there's no daily briefings. There's no daily briefings. There's the diplomatic corps, which is operating solely by the ambassador to the United Nations, from the former governor from the state of South Carolina, and the rest of the diplomatic corps are so depleted, there is no diplomacy from America at the moment. And when Rex Tillerson, as State Department Secretary, says he's not going to the NATO meeting because he's going to Russia, that should be sounding alarm bells.
We're going to put a pin in it right there, Byron. We've got to go. We've got a minute and a half. Thanks for calling in. The Kay Thompson Live show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Thank you, Byron Saunders. Thank
you. Yes, sir.
Take care. All right.
Thank you,
Mr. Wayne. Mr. Wayne Gilman, thank you, sir, once again.
Thank you. All right.
Take care.
Don't forget the network series at the Payne Building in Newark. We're going to be there with Richard Leslie, a noted playwright, and 6:45 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Newark Lecture Hall. Next Wednesday, March 30th, 6:45. We're going to be there. It's going to be a ball.
All right. Thanks, everybody, once again, for listening in to the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne, also known as The Sun. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live, and we'll also archive Kay Thompson Live, blogtalkradio.com/ Kay Thompson Live. I am The Sun, Eric Payne. You are?
I'm the mother of Eric Payne here on WLIV. Here on Kay Thompson Live. So join us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.